Ruth and chapter number 2. We'll use as a springboard verse number 3, speaking of the providence of God, or her hap. And then we're going to highlight each of the chapters. Notice this matter of the hand of God working in the glove of humanity. I would make it even closer, the hand of God working in the glove of your life. God's free, foreseeing care and guidance of our lives. Omnisciently directing the affairs of mankind. The hand of God in the glove of humanity. Verse 3 of chapter 2 said, "And she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers and her hap." To some, that would be her fortune. Others, that would be her chance or her good luck. But for you and I, we know that it was the providence of God happening at that point. We realize that everything that had happened before was happening right up to the hap. And everything that would happen after that would happen because of the hap. And thank God she was able to experience God's hap in her life. And I'm glad that as a 14-year-old boy, I began to realize God's hap. That once it happens, it never stops happening. It is His providential working that we are blessed to have in our lives. It is the answer to everything that has happened. Let us not moan and groan about the past, but see it as God's hand. But it is the promise of everything that will happen, and the sufficiency for the now and the happening. It all of it, everything that God had ever done, everything He would ever do, met right there at the hap. Eternity ran right straight through there. And honey, I want you to know, it thrills me to know that eternity ran right straight through where I was at. And connected me up with all. This is not just her happening. This connected her up with all God's haps. In all of our lives. A train of haps coming through this world. And thank God I'm riding it all the way to glory. God's hand keeping it on track as it comes on by. We went back and saw some of those Old Testament figures to magnify how through the providence of God, Miriam was able to see some things. Through the providence of God, David was able to do some things. Through the providence of God, Joseph was able to feel some things. Through the providence of God, Naaman's maid was able to say some things. Through the providence of God, the little lad was able to have some things. And through the providence of God, we're going to notice in the book of Ruth that Ruth was placed in some things. God's hand placed her. God's providential hand working in the glove of her life positioned her so that she could experience the hap. And to realize that we're none here by accident. But even on this night, amidst our hat, that God would let us see some things and hear some things and have some things and feel some things so that we can go out and do some things and say some things. Because we happen to have a hat that keeps on happening. And we're happy about it. Went up the New England states a few years back. Was up there some 10 or 12 days. It was an eerie experience when it dawned on me. We were in different crowds and different places of eating and shopping and whatever. And I said to my wife at the end of that, I said, "Do you realize..." Said, "It just dawned on me that we've been up here amongst groups of people in different sites and things of that nature and have only heard laughter. I don't know that I'd heard laughter over 5 times. And she said, "Why?" And I said, "Well, here's why I think it is. If you live in the part of the country that does not believe there is a God, and most of them don't up there, and you think that evolution is the answer, and you didn't have no reason for coming into this world, and you ain't got no reason for leaving this world, you got no cause for even being here, you're an accident, you ain't got nothing to laugh about." But I said, in every meeting we go in and we're among God's saints, you hear laughter, rejoicing. Because it comes out of the deep well of knowing the happenings of God in your life. To know that He made it happen in the beginning, He's going to make it happen in the end. And everything in between is going to be His hand. And the glove working through your life. So I want to look at these 4 chapters, and I want us to see God's providential hand placing Ruth in some things. The first thing that I would point out to you is in chapter 1, if you will, and you'll look down in verse number 22. Said, "So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law with her, which returned out of the country of Moab." What we notice from chapter number 1 is that that was her beginning. It was Moab. It was her country. It was her history. It was her family. The question would be is how in the world could a young lady being raised in such a place as Moab ever have any kind of future? We understand the beginnings of Moab. Coming out of incest with Lot and his daughters. And that very spirit of immorality and sin and so on reigned in that nation. So that when the children of Israel were coming out of Egypt and they were going through the desert, it was there that the Moabitish women tempted those Israelitish men. And God said, because of that, there will be no Moabite in the congregation to the 10th generation. And as far as I can tell in Scripture, I can only think of Ruth and maybe one other Moabite that is listed a part of the congregation of the children of Israel. In other words, when we pick up with Ruth, she's in a hopeless place. She's in a condemned place. It is her kinfolk and her family that would seem to be the very major place, almost the number one enemy of God, that Moab would be the least likely place of which a girl like this would ever find God. But isn't it amazing how God, with his hand in the glove of Moab, could work things around to where when we find her, the first place is in Moab. But it's in Moab she finds God. And it's in Moab that God found her because he knew where he had placed her. Her birth was no accident as a Moabite. God designed that. Being born in Moab was no accident. God designed that. It seems as though that it would almost be impossible for her to be connected to Jehovah, to the God of heaven. Not only when we think about Moab, when we think about Abimelech and we think about Naomi, who went down into Moab, as most all of us believe or think, in a backslidden condition. And it's a sad story. All of chapter number one is a sad story. Nothing in there says God on any level. She marries one of them boys, part of the family that come from Bethlehem down there. And her husband dies, her brother-in-law dies, her father-in-law dies, and her mama-in-law is bitter. It's been a long, long journey in Moab for that family, and Ruth is connected to it, but it seems to be the darkest of darkest of darkest of days. But amazingly, God is able to take that which seems so wrong and bring out something right. Aren't you glad that he can? What an odd place to find God. It's her heritage, it's her history, it's her heart. But right in the midst of every bit of this that is so godless, God shows up around her, in her, for her, coming towards her. Headed, where are you going, God? I'm going to Moab. I'll say he's a Moabite down there that I'm doing work in her heart and her life. But we as God's children, we realize how true that is for all of us. She was not only raised in the darkest, most ungodly situation, but I thought about what Paul said in Ephesians 2, and you hath he quickened who were dead in trespasses and in sins. Wherein in time past ye walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience. I think if you could write all of our stories, it would be somehow like Ruth's, that our beginning was a beginning of fallen humanity. that left to ourselves, we would wander into eternity lost. This girl was a sure, for if you were born a Moabite, you was as sure to go to hell as the day you were born. God's curse was on you. But God's providence let her be born in that Moabite situation, and his hand worked in the glove of the Moabite situation, and she found God in Moab. Where'd you first come to the knowledge of God, Ruth? Oh, she says, in Moab? You got churches down? No. Got preachers? No. You got Christians down there? We had four and they was backslid? No. How'd you find God? Well, it seemed as though that he found me. In an impossible place of darkness, the light came on. And if you don't believe that, you listen as Naomi says to her, you stay back here. I ain't going to have no more children. If I did, you wouldn't wait to marry one of them. Just stay here. Her sister-in-law gave up to stay, but she said, oh, entreat me not to leave thee, nor to return from following after thee. She said, your God, here's the first time we knew. I mean, she's talking about the God of Naomi. Your Jehovah is my Jehovah. And where you die, I'm dead. Where you buried, I'm buried. I'm going with God. Well, I didn't even know you knew God. This is Moab. That's amazing how the Lord can do that, ain't it? I had heard this story years ago, and I wanted to verify it, and then I wanted to verify it again. The man who actually knew the preacher that this happened to, talking about the glove of God, the hand of God, and the glove of humanity. And this preacher was up near Elijah, Georgia, and he was just riding along on those deserted roads, and he said, the Lord told him, said, pull over right here. Said he spoke to my heart and said, pull over right here and preach. He said, I argued with him. He said, Lord, we're out in the middle of nowhere. There ain't nothing here. Why do you want me? He said, just pull over and preach. And his first name was Lee. I'm trying to think of the last. But anyway, you wouldn't know him. I didn't know him personally. Anyway, he said, I pulled over and he said, I got out of the car, got my Bible, and he said, I just started preaching up down the side of the road, preaching the gospel. Said, I got my car and I drove off. Never thought any more about it. Sort of strange. But several years later, he was in a church preaching a meeting. And he said, I got up and he said, I opened my Bible and I started reading the Bible. Chadsworth, Georgia. Said that, he said, I didn't know. He said a woman jumped up in the back and said she was screaming to the top of the lung, that's him! That's him! You're him! He said, I thought, what? Him? What did I do? She began to tell as a young woman, two or three young'uns around her feet, she was out in the cornfield. Pulling up weeds. Back in those mountains up there near Elijah. And she said she heard a voice up through there somewhere. Didn't know where's that. And she said, for the first time, I heard the gospel. And she said, I bowed down in that little cornrow and gave my life to Jesus. And said, I've been serving him ever since. But I never thought I'd find the man to preach the gospel to me. You're him. God has strange ways of getting to us. Strange ways he had getting to me. But I'm glad he knows where Moab is. Because that's where he put me to come and get me. She's in Moab, but the providential hand of God comes down. And she finds God because he found her. He knew where she is at. Now I want to jump over to chapter number 2, if you will. And I want to look, well, let's go back and read verse 22 of chapter 1. And then we can go on over into chapter 2 and read verse 1, 2, and 3. So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, which returned out of the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of barley harvest. You see, God's providence placed her in Moab. But now God's providential hand is placing her in Bethlehem. Now she didn't choose Bethlehem. Naomi's home was Bethlehem. And when she said, I'm going home, it just happened to be Bethlehem. So that's what got her to Bethlehem. No need to ask her about Bethlehem. She didn't even know where it was. She's just following mama-law. And it ends up providentially at Bethlehem. And notice, if you will, in verse 1, Naomi had a kinsman of hers, a mighty man of wealth, of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. Guess where he lived? Bethlehem. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn after him in whose sight I shall find what? Where? Bethlehem. And she said to her, go, my daughters. I say to you that God's hand of providence in the glove of humanity placed her in Moab, and she found God. God found her. But God's hand of providence and the glove of humanity places her in Bethlehem. And it is in Bethlehem she finds grace. Boy, aren't you glad when you found God or he found you, you found grace and grace found you. Anytime you run into God, you're going to run into his grace, because it was his grace that allowed you to run into him. And here she is now in Bethlehem. She enters into this field that we would call a field of grace, because that's all she's going in there for, is grace. Now her grace would be a little different than your grace. My grace would be a little different than your grace. Because God has grace for all of us in different measures and different kinds. If we would go to Noah and ask him, say, could you just paint me a picture of the grace of God in your life? And he'd paint a picture of an ark. He'd say, right there it is. That's God saved me. And then we would run over there to Ruth and say, Ruth, did you find grace? She said, sure did. Said, was it a great big old ark? She said, no, it's just little tiny seeds. But it was exactly the grace that I needed for my life. She didn't need an ark. She needed a field that had these seeds in it. And that's exactly where God is placing her in His providence. She enters, there is an entrance into this grace, and she finds out the abundance of this grace that had been waiting on her. When her hap took place, grace was there before the hap happened. I'm glad it was. It was the law that made room for her in the finding of this grace, because the law and grace come together. You'll never find grace unless the law points it out. He's the schoolmaster that led us to Christ. The law. And God, I'm going to tell you, God's providential hand's always connected to His Word. You can't claim God, not claim His Word. You can't follow God, not follow His Word. I find out religiously a lot of people operate off of sentiment or feelings or emotions. Well, that ain't going to help. But I'm going to tell you, long before she was ever born, God said to Moses, I want you to write in a book, son, that when any stranger or sojourner comes into Israel, that you don't reap all your fields. You leave the corners for them to come in and to eat of that grace, we'll call it. And let her follow after the reapers. So when she goes, she no doubt knows by Naomi. Now, Naomi probably instructed her by the book. Now, you can go into any field you go into, but make sure you stay in the corners and behind the reapers, and they can't do nothing. As a matter of fact, there'll be a sign right up there at each field that'll let you know you can come in there by the law. The law would let her in. The law would let her pick, but there were limitations because of the law. Limitations. That was the problem with the law, the reason why it wouldn't work for your salvation. You were too limited. You couldn't fulfill it. But all inside of that Bethlehem field of grace, where the law let her in, love took over. And while there's limitations to the law, honey, there are no limitations to love. God brought her to where grace would not only feed her, but grace would love her. And here comes, man, isn't this ain't just a chance. This is not just good luck. This is the hap of God. As Boaz comes home, looks out over the field, asks the steward over the field, he notices that lady down there. J. Vernon McGee said, yes, he said, who is that damsel? J. Vernon McGee said in the Greek, that meant, where in the world did she come from? Caught his eye and caught his heart. He goes up to her and he said, sister, I know about you. You've come to trust under the wings of the Almighty. God got a hold of her in Moab, and now she's in Bethlehem. She found God and grace found her.
He said, I notice you don't have no lunch. Would you like to eat lunch with me? Oh, she said, I'm not worthy of that. I'm not like your handmaids. He said, don't matter, you come near. And then when she came, the Bible said she sopped with them. Now, I've sopped before. I went to Egypt, and that's what they do. They sop down there. I didn't even like what they was sopping. But they'd pass it around, and, you know, everybody, they'd want you to get that piece of bread. They wanted you to sop with them, so you had to run your hand down in there because that's what they did, and you just ate it. But the strange thing is, here's a Moabite sinner girl sitting at the table at Bethlehem with the man that owns the field of grace sopping out of the same bowl. Yes. But I've always thought this. You don't mind sopping with the one you're planning on kissing. That's what he had in mind. Huh? And then he marries her. He's a rich man. She's a poor woman. What happens when a poor woman marries a rich man? Now, I don't know what it does for him, but she gets rich overnight. As a matter of fact, can I say to you, grace is never satisfied till you get it all. Grace has full intention of giving you the abundance and the fullness of God. She's in Moab, but God put her there and she found God. Now she's in Bethlehem. God put her there and she found grace. But let me say to you, children, once you find grace, you realize it was grace that found you. And once you find grace, you'll find out that grace is all you'll ever need to find. It'll be the sufficiency. It was her, so once she found that field, kept her the rest of her days. Everything come out of that one field of grace for the rest of her days. And God, providentially, when God saved me, He set me up. That out of the grace that flowed from Him, that every need I would ever have would be met out of that hap. And the sufficiency of His grace. Woo! She's in Moab. And there's God. She's in Bethlehem, and there is grace. Now, I would go over to chapter number 3, if you would. I'm talking about the very providential hand of God, the hap of her life. In the glove of humanity, in the glove of our lives, the reason why we're here tonight. Providence has placed her in Moab. Providence has placed her in Bethlehem. But look in chapter 3 and verse number 4. She goes back home in chapter 2 and tells her mom-in-law what has happened. She said, well, who was this guy? And when she found out, she shouted about it. She said, God's working here. He's the nearest of kin. He's what this thing's all about. Verse 4, she's given her instruction and said, it shall be. Well, let's go back up to verse 1. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, my daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee? And now is not Boaz of our kindred, with whose maiden thou wast? Behold, he winnoweth barley tonight in the threshing floor. Wash thyself therefore and anoint thee. Put thy raiment upon thee. Get thee down to the floor. Make not thyself known unto the man until he have done eating. And it shall be when he lieth down, that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie, and thou shalt go in and uncover his feet and lay thee down. And I like this next phrase. And he will tell thee what thou shalt do. Look down in verse number 12. She does that. He becomes aware that she's there. Now it is true, I am thy near kinsman, albeit there is a kinsman nearer than I.
tarry this night, and it shall be in the morning, that if he will perform unto thee the part of the kinsman well, let him do the kinsman's part. But if he will not do the part of the kinsman to thee, then will I do the part of the kinsman to thee, as the Lord liveth. Lie down until the morning. Look in verse number 18. And then said she, sit still, my daughter, until thou know how the matter will fall, for the man will not be in rest until he have finished the thing this day. I notice that God's providential hand has moved in her life. She's in Moab and finds God. She's in Bethlehem and she finds grace. But here I notice in this text that she is in the field at Boaz's feet. She has come to submit herself. Providence will bring you down before it ever brings you up. And she's not aware of all the workings of what needs to happen in her life to straighten things out. So she didn't know what to do nor how to do it. But there was set up some good news awaiting on her, that all she had to do is go and get at his feet, and she would get the revelation and information that she needed for this utmost important detail of redemption in her life. Can I say to you, you can always find the answer at his feet. As a matter of fact, the answer cannot be found anywhere else. But if you can go down and lay at his feet, there will be some revelation, there will be some information that will change your life. Because what he does in the nutshell, I like to word it this way. She's placed in Moab to find God. She's placed in Bethlehem to find grace. She's placed in the field at his feet to hear the gospel. Because that is exactly what she gets, is the pure gospel. Wow, don't you love the gospel? The gospel was part of that providential working in your life. Because if you hadn't heard the gospel, you couldn't be saved. How can they be saved except they hear? That gospel, that, oh, listen, children of God, the Lord has given us good news. Amen. And I love to be around God's people because inevitably they're going to give me good news. Because what they're going to talk about is the good news. I love to hear the singing because all the singing this week so far has been about the good news. All the praying has been full of the good news. But honey, that good news is the power of God unto salvation. And he says it to her in a twofold way. Two parts. He tells her what he's going to do. And that's the big part of the gospel, is what he's done. Huh? That's the big part of the gospel, is what, I ain't building no bridge to get to heaven. He's already made the way. He is the way. It's about, he said, now, lady, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. And then he tells her the gospel. I'm going to go up there. I'm going to settle this thing with the one who thinks he's the nearest of kin. I'm going to pay the price of redemption. I'm going to buy you. I'm going to buy everything concerning you. I'm going to take what was wrong, and I'm going to make it right, and I'll be back.
Amen.
That's what I'm going to do. That's what Jesus came and did. And that's what he did for every sinner. He's done it. But he has a part for her. He said, what I want you to do is just relax and rest and be still. Until, and her mama-in-law knew the gospel too, said, honey, I tell you what you do. You can't do nothing to add to this, and you can't do nothing to take away from it. You just go sit down till you see him coming across the ridge with a shoe in his hand, and you know it's done. It is done. The gospel. My nephew I mentioned, I wish you could meet him. He's full. He got saved in prison, but he's full. He's full, been saved 17 years, but still, when you run into him, it's just like he was saved yesterday. He's got something to tell you, and it's always good news. Huh? It's the gospel. Everywhere he goes, he's got a good news. Have you heard?
Yes.
The gospel! I was reading there in Matthew where Jesus said, go and to all the world and preach the gospel, the good news. But then he attached to that to every creature. I used to think that meant to common sensed people. But that word creature means everything he ever created. Don't hold back. And I thought to myself, I heard a fellow telling me one time, he said, son, when I was your age, he said, I had a herd of cattle out there, and wouldn't nobody let me preach to them, said I'd get up and I'd go out there and lean across the fence, and I'd call them cattle up there to feed them. I'd preach the gospel to them. Honey, all creation loves to hear the gospel. You say, I don't know they could comprehend it. You may be surprised. That old donkey comprehended a lot of stuff, didn't it? That rooster comprehended a lot of stuff. It might be well. I'm telling you, I thought about this today. We can't grow. I'm talking about not the grass this world talks about. We can't grow grass. Alabama won't grow it. Then I'm going to get out there and start preaching to it. I'm just going to walk up down the grass and preach to it. The gospel.
Yes.
Huh? There ain't nowhere you can't preach the gospel. The good news. Your dog needs to hear the good news. Preach the gospel. But oh. Especially those who can hear the gospel.
Help me, Lord.
And she got no clue. Said, you go get down and he'll go up. And then he'll come down and bring you up. But the heart of it is that good news. You see the problem? She ain't going to be at his feet unless providence puts her there. She's not going to be in Bethlehem unless providence puts. She may be born in Moab, but she ain't going to know God unless providence works that out. Woo! I'm glad for everything providence has brought me to. So what I could see and hear and know. But thank God I'm excited of where providence is going to take me, the places. No accident that I crossed paths with your pastor. And he said to me, I want you to come preach for me. And you know what I come loaded with? The gospel! I get excited because I get to share the gospel! Ooh. Let's notice. Providence of God. Hand of God working in the cloud of humanity. I'm going to tell you. Bringing her to Moab where she could find God. Bringing her to Bethlehem where she could find grace. Bringing her to his feet where she could hear the gospel. But I would go to chapter number 4. And of course you know how that works out. Let's read verse 11. This is after he's went up there and settled the deal and got the shoe, bought everything and restored everything and took that which was wrong and made it right. And all the people that were in the gate, he'd done that up at the gate, you know that. That was the courthouse in that day. It's where all legal matters were settled, called the elders together. And the elders said, they were satisfied. Obviously, Boaz was satisfied. I'm pretty sure Ruth's going to be satisfied. And God is satisfied because he set it all up. And the elders said, we are witnesses. The Lord make the woman that is come into thine house like Rachel and like Leah, which too did build the house of Israel, and do thou worthily in Ephratah and be famous in Bethlehem. Of course, you know how it ends. He takes Ruth. She becomes his wife. Son is born unto her by the name of Obed. Obed has a son named Jesse. Jesse has a son named David. And then we run out all the way out to Jesus. Now that's a providential hand right there. But I'm going to tell you something. God's providence always ends with Jesus. It's always headed toward Christ. But I want you to notice with me now how God's providence has placed her in Moab and she finds grace. Has placed her in Bethlehem, or she finds God and she finds grace. Has placed her at his feet and she gets the gospel. That when we come to this chapter, here is the completeness and fullness of the providence of God in her life. How magnificent and marvelous it is. Because it is here we find her finally, not in Moab, not just in Bethlehem, not just at his feet, but now she's in the family. Now how do you take a Moabitish girl, born by nature a Moabite sinner, and make her a child of God? You can't, but God can. And it's a providential work that does that. And I'm sure that there would have been those in that day that would have looked at her because of her Moabitish features and would have pretty well guessed and said, you know, that lady that owns that field up there, maybe he was much older, I think, when they married, probably dead by then. But you know that lady up there that runs that field, owns that field and everything? Matter of fact, I see her she's down there in the palace sometimes. She walks around like she owns it. I mean, who is she? I don't want to be talking now. I know I don't want to say nothing out of turn, but I was in Moab last week. And I'll be honest with you, I think I saw her kinfolk down there. I thought it was her. Huh? You know how people are. Huh? I thought it was her. Nope. She ain't no more about it. She's an Israelite. Oh, what makes you think that? I mean, If she was born down there and her parents was down there and she looks like them, she can't be no Israelite. I just ain't going to put her. I can't believe that. Well, they said she is. Well, prove it. Said, well, if you'll go up to the courthouse and check the record.
Yes.
Said there's witnesses up there. Always pass. We go up through, go back near the in the area where I was born and raised. And we pass the courthouse. We pass the Capitol, which is the courthouse area, every time we go up. And so as a result of being up there in meetings, we have actually went to the courthouse on three or four occasions just to check records, see if I'm who I think I am. They told me that my daddy's name was Lester and my mama's name was Kathleen. They told me who my grandpa was and great-grandpa. Matter of fact, they're buried up there at the graveyard. But I thought I'd go in there and just check and see. Now, I always thought I was, and my birth certificate said I was, but I'm going to tell you something. When I went in there, and I put, you can do that for yourself. Don't go too deep now. I finally had to leave out of there. I found out more than what I wanted to find out, I'll tell you that much. But I checked those records, and I'm going to tell you, they had the actual originals. It was there, witnessed by doctors and whoever. I was born as they said I was. 100%. If you'd have went to the courthouse up there and said, I want this lady down here, calls her name Ruth. Her last name's Boaz. I want you to check through there for me. Can you give me the, you can get the records. You can get them. They're on file now. You just, you know, you can get the records. I want to check over them records. I want to find out for myself and see if you don't mind. Yes, sir, you just come over here right here. You got the age and time when it was? Well, I think it's about how long did y'all say it was? All right, go ahead. And they run right down through there. And right there they find it. Courthouse records has set the deal that from the day that Boaz married her, she became an Israelite. She became part of the family. That's the courthouse records. Courthouse records. Now, I'm going to tell you this. My daughter Lydia, her husband Brenda, adopted my older brother's granddaughter. Terrible situation in West Virginia. Horrible. Horrible. But they adopted her, what was she, about a year and a half old. Had to go up there, you know, for court and all that. And finally, after 8 or 10 times, the judge just gave up hope on them up there and said, you can take her and you can adopt her. We happened to be at the house, at Lydia's house, the day they got the adoption papers, the final papers. I grabbed those things and I've got copies of them. I read them. Should have brought them tonight. The thing that thrilled me about it, it was almost like he was reading Romans about this matter of adoption. It carries that same line in it. And what those adoption papers said, that from that day forward, that little Raylan would be the daughter of Lydia and Brandon Ledford and would take their last name. And would be, in case of their death, able to receive the same inheritances that their children would receive. That was great, but what blew my mind away is this. They said, from this day forward, you will not be able to find record of a Raylan by her previous last name. Those records of any life with that other name have been sealed. And even the legal folks can't go in and search them out. So I don't care what courthouse you went into and what records you were to check. As far as those records are concerned, all of them say that the day she was born a Ledford. Settled and sealed, man. I mean, you think about that. And I got a preacher friend, Brandon Vaughn's out in Utah, used to be over there in Alabama. He was adopted when he was young, and he got a burden to try to find out who his mama was so that he could witness to her. His parents were, and so he could witness to them. He wrote a book about it. I was reading the book over again this week just for this thought. And he tried for several years going through all of the legal ramifications and going through all of the adoption agencies that were connected to it and going through the governmental agencies of it. And they came up with nothing. They all said, "We can't help you. Even if we did know, it'd be against the law for us to tell you." He said, "I couldn't find any of that, and I was the adopted child. I couldn't find out." He said, "I just got to the place that I was just all out of sorts. I felt like it's just impossible." And then one day, he was talking to one of the ladies in one of the adoption agency of which it took place, and she said, "Well, I'll tell you, all I can do is I can send you your mom's information. Some of the document. I can send you the document that's got your mom's in, but everything on it that's important is blacked out. Nothing on it will help you, but I will send it." He said, "Well, okay, at least I'll get it." He said he got, and that got lost for almost 2 years. The lady forgot to send it, fell back over behind one of the cabinets. And then finally they called him one day and said, "Listen, Mr. Vaughn, these were supposed to be mailed to you, but we're sorry, we're going to ship them to you." So it's over a period of several years. He can't find out who his mama, real mama was and daddy was. And that's the way adoption is. It sets and seals it. That there ain't no past beyond this. And so he gets the paper, and sure enough, everything's blacked out, and he's discouraged again. He looks at it and turns it around. And he said, "I had an idea." He said, "I took that in. I waited until it got real dark." And he said, "I went into a room, closed all the doors, no light at all." And he said, "I got the most powerful flashlight that I could. And I got to shining it across through there." And he said, "Very faintly and vaguely, I made out my mother's name and date of birth." And you know, the good story about that is, to add to it, he did get connected to her. She got saved. His brother, stepbrother got saved. His daddy, stepdad got saved. And God just put those families together. But I said all that to say this. If you want to search Ruth out, you can't go back beyond the Boaz. There ain't no record of it. Huh? Somebody said, "Oh, well, the record says." I'll give it to you. The record. Ain't you glad you got a record on high that says that doesn't go back? I mean, doesn't go back before your hap and your salvation. Thank God. No record. I like that. But then somebody would say, "Well, why?" I know she's a Moabite because she looks like one. Well, I understand they couldn't do this in that day, but if they could have. You could have said to him, "I'll tell you what you do. You go down to the palace and you talk to the king or one of his young'uns and see if they'll do a DNA test. And if you can do a DNA test, get some of the king's blood and get some of her blood, you'll find out they got the same DNA in them. Because she's kin to the king." Is she kin to the king? That's why she, I mean, she only had to live to the fourth generation to have seen, I've seen a lot of four generations, I've seen five generations, to have been alive when her son become king. And do you know he's going to let his grandmama, great-grandmama come into the throne room and she walks her, and she just walks around like she owns the place. Why? She's kin to him. So matter of fact, I do think she favors him too. He favors her. Isn't it amazing when you think about your past and so much of that world that was so much of your past, that when God saves you, he connects you to his blood and cleanses you, and others begin to see reflections of him in you. She finally found the genealogy. She found God. She found grace. Thank God she found the gospel. She found her genealogy. She's a part of the family of God. And the thing that excites me is you can check the record books. The blood tells me that I'm part of a big family. Somebody said, well, how'd you map all that out? I didn't. That providential hand come down and started working and brought me all the way out of Moab, brought me into grace, brought me to his feet, and put me a part of the family. And have you, after you got saved, isn't it amazing how you were so foreign to all of this? You felt like you were a foreigner around this?
Yes.
But now you feel like you're a fellow citizen of the household of faith? I mean, I'm telling you. I'm not proud of it. It's just the way we was raised. Foul language was my first language, and stealing was not wrong in my family. You just don't get caught. Lying, all of that stuff. I'm telling you, all of it was there. It was deep, deep, deep. So much so that families in the community wouldn't let their kids come to my house. And I could tell when I went to theirs, they were a little shaky. I could tell they wanted to check my pockets when I left. My brothers would steal the cereal, send me out there in the morning and steal the milk. Used to, they'd have milk jugs on the cinema. I'd steal the milk till I got caught one day. They said, Dana, where are you going with our milk? I said, nowhere. I put it down and run. But hey, I got saved and went to that little old storefront church. And I felt like I was a part. Because when the Spirit moved, it's the same Spirit moved in them, moved in me. When they prayed, they cried out with that same spirit of the Son that I had within me. And it went along, they said to me, you want to sing in the choir? I said, you want to let me sing in the choir? They said, yeah, you can sing. Oh, I felt it at home. And then they asked me one day, said, you want to teach a class? I said, you want me to teach the class? Man. She's as much one of God's youngins. And if you don't believe it, go to Matthew chapter number 1 and read the genealogy. In the book. But she didn't do any of that. God done it. God done it. She wouldn't have known how to do that. Providence brought her to God. Providence brought her to grace. Providence gave her the gospel. And providence gave her a new family with a future. My dad went into DTs. I was the last child at home. Put him in a mental institution. My brother, who was also a drunk, a little wife with one young, and came all the way to West Virginia to get me to take me out. I already quit school. They were going to put me back in school with them. They rented a little old apartment. You've heard me say this. They rented a little old apartment over top of some Christians. The lady in that house's name was Grace. She started knocking on that door upstairs. And my sister-in-law testifies to this. She said, because it started with her, she said she went to open the door and there stood Grace. She had met her because she lived downstairs, but she was crying. She was sobbing. She said, what's wrong? Something bad wrong? She said, no, I've just been praying for you and your husband, little family. I'm afraid you're going to hell. I want to tell you about Jesus. And grace led her to Jesus. And then my brother got saved, and then I got saved. I didn't set none of it up. God did. I'm glad for my hap, aren't you?
Yes.
The providence of God. Let's stand.